Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Droszkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan? Representative Keeler?
Jordan, present.
Keeler, present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasliwick?
Wasliwick, present.
Representative Bowe? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Next up, we have approval of the minutes. Representative Wasliwick, have you had an opportunity to look at the March 23rd, 2022 minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Members, this will be a voice vote. If you could please unmute. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, we are going to hear from two testifiers on the DE1 amendment to House File 3401. Who were unable to join us during Wednesday's hearing. First up, under public testimony, I have Adil Abdul. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And not hearing from her, I will move to next on the list, Irene Fulstrom. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Oh, there you are.
Sorry. I swear, technology, I'm too old for this chair. I was trying to find the unmute thing because my kid, you know, he's having autism moments and I didn't want you guys to hear that. Thank you. I apologize for not finding that. Thank you so much again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aida Abdul. I feel like I'm a regular here. I should start. Delivering pizza or coffee or something. I am a Somali autism mom and advocate. Today, I thought I'd talk about and tell you about students with special education needs who are suspended and why it's important to teach them and not punish them because of their disability. I've told you before and for years now that my son who has nonverbal autism was suspended by Bloomington Public School District. The teacher did not give him his communication device, changed his daily routine, then suspended him with the principal. My kid did not understand suspension then, does not understand it now. Autism, as you may know, is a disability that is medically diagnosed. Individuals with autism have various challenges, including communication skills, sensory needs, self-care skills, social and behavior regulation skills. We would not punish someone who is missing a leg for not running fast. We would not punish someone who is missing an ear for not hearing well. We would not punish someone for bumping into things for being blind. Yet we're punishing students with disabilities because of their disability. Madam Chair, this happens in members. There was a superintendent in this committee a few years ago who testified and stated that, and I quote, "We often suspend students with disabilities because we need a break and to regroup." I want you to think about that and digest it. Let me repeat it for you. This is also what I've been told by Bloomington School District. We suspend students with disabilities because we need a break and to regroup. How can this be okay with anyone, most of all? Lawmakers, this cannot be okay. The adults who choose to be in special education teachers and principals cannot, shall not, and must not be allowed to kick students from school because they need a break. Come on, no. Imagine if a chef said in the middle of a packed restaurant, "Excuse me, but I need you all to leave because I need a break and to regroup." Imagine if a nurse said to her patients in the middle of a medical treatment, "Excuse me, but I need to kick you out for 5 days because I need to regroup." Imagine if an attorney in the middle of a court case said, "I need to regroup and I'm going to suspend you because I need to regroup and need a break." This would be not allowed and headlines would be tolerated. I know, I think I'm out of my time, but in summary, please, please, please think about this. Students with disabilities cannot be suspended because of their disability. We need to help the adults and give them resources to keep the kids in the classroom. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Irene Folstrom. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Not hearing from Irene Folstrom. We'll maybe just pause for a second. It looks like she is not on the Zoom. So I will now pass the gavel over to Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Richardson, would you like to move House File 3401 to be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance?
So moved.
Chair Richardson, would you also like to move the DE1 Authors Amendment to your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved.
Chair Richardson, would you like to move the A7 amendment to the House File 3401 DE1 amendment?
Thank you. I will move that as well.
Members will have a time certain vote on this amendment to House File 3401 DE1 amendment at 1:20. Chair Richardson, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A7 amendment has several technical amendments to it. I will just focus on the substantive changes in Article 1 under Section 16 and Section 17. It clarifies that a resident district or a charter school may provide online instruction for a child with a short-term or temporary physical, emotional illness or disability in a day treatment or residential program if the student agrees and is 18 or older, or if a parent or guardian agrees to that form of instruction. The next substantive change is in Article 3, Section 10. It amends the section that district and charter school reporting on staff hiring and dismissal, that will go to PELSBY instead of NDE.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Member questions? I don't see any hands up. I'll give a moment. All right. Chair Richardson renews, since I don't see any questions, Chair Richardson renews the motion to adopt A7 to the DE1 amendment. Members, please unmute yourself to vote on the A7 amendment. All in favor of adopting the A7 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. The DE1 amendment is now the author's preferred form. Chair Richardson, do you have an opening comments to the DE1 amendment?
Madam Chair, I think we were actually going to move to amendments. I think we were beginning with the amendment, the A8 Erdahl amendment.
Oh, okay. All right. A8 amendment. Professor Erdahl, would you like to move the A8 amendment to House File 3401?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move the A8 amendment.
Representative Ordahl, please explain your amendment.
Okay. The A8 amendment addresses staff and student safety in our schools. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I've had bills regarding this in the past. This has some changes from what I've been trying to do. This comes to me from former teachers, current teachers, and other staff members who have concerns about their safety in schools, and they believe that this amendment does address their concerns. What I've done is taken Representative Hansen's bill, which had 20 DFL co-authors, and deleted references to specific groups, not because I think they shouldn't have protection, but because under my amended language, all would be included and covered under this. Yes, malicious and sadistic conduct should be addressed in school policy. Let me elaborate. I can define for you. Well, now I can't find my paper that defines this. But, you know, malicious and sadistic are certainly very serious and important things that should be addressed in school policy. So let's include all students and staff in this definition. Let me also suggest that if the intent is to see this law become law, we have a better chance of getting it done with this language. Now, as far as, again, going back to malicious and sadistic, it's very plain that all people need to be protected from this, not just the particular groups. So what I'm trying to do, and I've also removed any removal from class. That was in one of my bills, that for 3 days they would be removed. And that's not here anymore. All I'm saying is I'm using as a base Representative Hansen's bill. I'm removing the references to certain groups for a couple of reasons. One, because I think it would help to pass the bill eventually. But secondly, because they're not needed. If it's malicious for one, if it's sadistic for one group, it's malicious or sadistic for all. And so that's my bill, my amendment.
Thank you. Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Representative Ertl, I think that it's important to understand that sadistic and malicious conduct that is motivated by bias has a different impact from malicious conduct that is happening generally. When we're talking about malicious conduct that's motivated by bias, it's occurring because the perpetrator's bias against the victim and an entire group of people based on their status, their race, their disability, their gender. That is the reason for the malicious conduct. And when you're intentionally targeting people for immutable characteristics, it's meant to send not just a message to that individual, it's meant to send a message to an entire group of people that they're unwelcome and that they are unsafe. When I was a kid growing up in St. Paul, my parents were close friends with another Black couple from the church that we attended. And one night, my parents' friends were awakened from their sleep to find a cross burning on their lawn. And when that happened, that family took that action as a direct threat against them. They felt unsafe for themselves. They felt unsafe with their kids. And they felt the message that they were being sent was that they were not welcome in that that neighborhood, and that they needed to watch their back within that neighborhood. And the impact of that event did not stop with just that family. I remember all of the families in the community and many of the families from our church getting together and talking about the impact of what that felt like and the impact of even for those of us where it wasn't our lawn that that cross was burned on, it was affecting the way we felt in terms of being included and welcomed and safe within the community. It really shook the community. And for my parents, who were both born and raised in the Deep South, where cross burnings were a common occurrence where they were from, and many Black women and men were lynched, there was a huge psychological impact for them as well. And one of the things that would oftentimes happen after lynchings within the South, photos would be taken of the mutilated bodies and they would be created and turned into postcards. And those were used to send a message to the community that they were unsafe. And we can find examples of that happening here in Minnesota as well. We can look at the stories of Elias Clayton, Homer Jackson, and Isaac McGee, whose bodies were on postcards where individuals posed with them after they were mutilated. And so when we're talking about people being intentionally targeted because of the color of their skin, their gender, their disability, we're talking about actions that are being done to make that entire community feel unsafe. And so for that reason, members, I would recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Rep. Otto, do you have last comments?
Just very briefly.
Okay.
And I don't want to diminish in any way any of the things that Representative Richardson was saying. I understand how important that is. All I'm saying is that I think we can extend it to all people without, again, specifically mentioning groups. If someone's conduct is malicious and sadistic, it doesn't really matter who is the target. No intentional acts of harm from which pleasure is derived is tolerable, and the definition of sadistic is taking pleasure in the infliction of pain, punishment, or humiliation of others, all of which, you know, we should condemn and should be in policy. I'm just trying to make sure that we are including everyone with this, but I do appreciate the comments that Representative Richardson made. Thank you. And I want a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Representative Ardal renews his motion to adopt the A8 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Absolutely not.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, no.
Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
With 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We have the A2 amendment. Representative Erdahl, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, I would. I will move the A2 amendment.
All right, members, we'll have a certain time vote on this amendment. I think my time's a little off. It says 2:10, but I'm sure we won't have that much of that time. Rosa Ordo, please explain your amendment.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will be pretty brief on this. Maybe we'll have better luck. The A2 amendment addresses the civics test. Now, we require a test in Minnesota for civics. 50 questions, they have to pass 30 or get 30 right to pass it. But under current law, there is no report required of student performance as we do in the other required tests that we have. Now, I'm not asking for MDE or anyone else to publish individual student scores or school scores. I'm not looking for competition between Fridley and New Brighton or things like that. I just want to see that each school district tells MDA or MDE the percent of students graduating each year who passed the test, and that MDE releases the state average. Just one score for the state of Minnesota. This year, 95% passed. Last year, 93% passed, something like that. I have included in my amendment off-ramps for how the civics test can't be used. For example, to determine a district's eligibility for state aid or to determine a student's promotion or retention, and there are other off-ramps there. Under state law, the Minnesota Department of Education has a process for reporting test scores and receives funding to do so. All I'm asking is that we conform to some of the other requirements that state required tests have. We require a test. We should be able to know if the test is indeed being given and how our state is doing. I don't really think it's too much to ask. It raises the relevance of civics in the state of Minnesota. And if you don't pay attention to how students are doing as compared to other tests that are given, what does it tell the students? It basically tells them that the state of Minnesota doesn't really care about what they're doing on a civics test. And so that's basically what my amendment is and what it does. Appreciate your support on this and look for a roll call.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested. Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl, for the amendment. I think that we all have the goal of ensuring that the next generation of decision makers and community leaders are going to have the tools that they need, not only to thrive and be successful, but to also be active civic participants. And I know that you have been a huge proponent of civics, Representative Erdahl. I will note that, nationally, there's lots of conversation happening around whether the current multiple choice exam that most states use in order to evaluate civics, if it's actually meeting the goals that we are hoping that it will meet. And there are some national movements at looking at different ways to really evaluate whether students are really learning the, have an active understanding of civics and also understand the reality of how to participate as well. And so members, I'm gonna recommend a no vote on this at this time, but I'm happy to work with Representative Erdahl on potentially some other language around this, knowing that we all want to ensure that students are graduating with the best chance of being active civic participants.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Member questions? I don't see any hands up. Mr. Erdahl, would you like to have the last word on the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I said this could be quick and easy. Well, I do appreciate the comments that Chair Richardson made. When we did this, it's been a long struggle to try to make civics more relevant in Minnesota. And frankly, there are other things that I would have done earlier differently, but that was the best that I could do to move civics forward, is to do the test and make a lot of compromises to try to make it more doable and more relevant. And if there are some thoughts on what we can do to work on that and to make sure that school districts are being held accountable for giving the test and for how their students are doing, or the state is held accountable, I think that's a worthy goal that I would like to continue to work on with Chair Richardson, unless this passes, but that could happen too.
Thank you, Rep. Erdahl. Mr. Erdahl renews the motion to adopt A2 amendment to the DE1 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Druskowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilik?
Wasilik, no.
Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
With 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Bennett would like to move A3 amendment. Representative Bennett, would you like to move the A3 amendment? Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A3 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Bennett, would you please explain your amendment?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members. So my amendment today removes non-public schools, those that wording, from the definition of enrolling district under the online learning option. And the online learning option actually was put into statute in 2003. And this DE amendment actually adds new definitions and requirements to the statute. And by adding non-public schools, includes them as an enrolling district. And with the enrolling districts, MDE then has the ability to require the use of things like licensed teachers, changes to curriculum, academic standards, changes to graduation requirements, and so on. And it's really unclear in the DE amendment how non-public schools fit into the statute as an enrolling district. The key stakeholders, such as non-public education council, were not consulted by MDE with this proposed change. And there may be unintended consequences to this that we don't want. Members, you also have in your packet a letter from non-public education partners outlining their concerns as well. So Madam Chair and members, I would just ask for your consideration to remove at this time the words non-public schools so that we can make sure that we're not having unintended consequences here and all the things that go along with enrolling districts. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this amendment forward. And I appreciate hearing your perspective around compulsory education. And I agree that there's some vagueness within the language and would be very open to working together with you on some potential language for the next step of the bill. The one thing I would note is that with the language of the current amendment, it would mean that non-public students would continue to have potentially less access to online course options because there would not be an ability to be able to access shared time aid to serve non-public students. And I think the goal of MDE was to make the services more accessible to non-public students. And perhaps, Madam Chair, if you would indulge me, MDE staff may have a comment around what the intent and the goal was as well.
Sure, Chair Richardson. Do we have Adosh Uni?
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And Madam Chair, Chair Richardson, I think, captured the intent perfectly. The idea was to make supplemental online courses more accessible for non-publics by allowing, for non-public students, by allowing the districts who serve them to be able to access shared time revenue for that. That was the intent. If there are, and the definitions here online, I believe 3.27, That definition section is for the purposes of that section, the online learning statute alone. So the intent is not to have any ramifications for other statutes or other programs that interact with non-public students. But as Chair Richardson indicated, more than happy to have further conversations with you and about how to make it in comfort language or there to capture the department's intent about creating more access for students in Minnesota, while also addressing some of the concerns that you raised.
Thank you, Adosh Uni. Member questions. Rosa Scott, I see that you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd like to ask for a roll call on this amendment. And then
a roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I have a question for Mr. Strom.
Okay.
Mr. Strom, so by including non-public schools in this, does that mean that the non-public schools would get online pupil aid?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I believe the intent was to broaden the ability for students to participate in shared time activities through online learning. And I think there may have been, the language may be inadvertently flipped. So I don't believe the intent was to allow the non-public school to be the provider of online learning, but rather to allow the non-public student to use online supplemental online learning as a shared time student. And I think maybe the issue with shared time right now, there's limitations on where a shared time class can occur that maybe the department would prefer that definition might be changed for purposes of supplemental online services. But I believe the goal of Chair Richardson and the department with this language was to give the non-public students who can currently participate in online in shared time as activities at the public school to do so through supplemental online learning. And I think that language does need to be flipped just a bit to get that in place.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Mr. Scott, do you have a follow-up?
I do. So thank you, Madam Chair. So as written, Mr. Strom, would this seem to indicate that non-public schools would get that online pupil aid then if their students participated?
Mr. Strom. Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I think there's vagueness as to how it's written. I think the department's intent was that the aid would go to the public institution, but that the non-public student could participate through the shared time program accessing a course that was delivered as a supplemental online learning. So I don't think the intent was ever that the state would pay that aid directly to the non-public school, but rather it would pay it to the public school and the non-public student would have the opportunity to attend that supplemental online program offered through shared time by the school.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Rosa Scott?
I'm just wondering, Madam Chair, so if this was taken to court, for instance, could it be construed in court that the non-public schools are entitled to this money? I guess to Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I'm not sure that I'm competent to answer that, but I think, you know, one of the things they'd certainly look at is what the intent is and what the committee discusses about that provision. I think that all parties here are agreeing that that language should perhaps be a little clearer in stating the direction in which the funding's going and what the opportunity is and whether the, I think both the department and Representative Richardson have said their intent is not to have the non-public school be the provider, but rather to focus on the non-public student being able to take that course at the public school through shared time.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Rosa Scott, we're going to move on. I see two other hands. Do you have a final comment?
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, I guess the final question then would be is if this amendment was adopted, would that remove the vagueness? And then I'm done.
Okay, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I think in my personal opinion, the best way to remove the vagueness is probably to state directly who the actors are and state that the non-public child has the opportunity to participate in supplemental online learning through shared time. If I had a fresh slate and were asked to write that's probably the direction I'd go. again, I may be overstepping my bounds just a bit here, but I think that would be the way to provide clarity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the department, because I believe this language came from them, you know, when we create new language in regard to, like, in this case, online learning, we've got to make sure that we are exactly specific as to what the intent is. And this leaves so many questions unanswered. So I'm really disappointed that the department has, if indeed this is their language, which I believe it is, has left this vagueness. And here we are trying to figure out really what does this mean? So I think supporting the Bennett Amendment would be our best path today. But then to get the department to do some research and actually tell us what is intended from this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Erickson. Rosa Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually have a question. I think this may be for Mr. Strom, but I'm not positive. But if we left this statute as is, and non-public schools with that word in there are then defined in enrolling districts, would non-public schools then, if they provide online learning, be under this approval, the ability for MDE to approve and require things like licensed teachers, changes to curriculum, academic standards, changes to graduation requirements, all the things that enrolling districts require? Would non-public schools then come under this umbrella of requirements from MDE?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, I think this gets to the intent, and my read of the intent is that the department was intending that non-public students be able to participate in shared time supplemental online learning, and that the department should speak for themselves on this, but I don't see the intent, even though that language I think could be read that way, I don't see the intent as trying to put the non-public schools as a provider of online learning and therefore subject to the criteria that you just mentioned, the compulsory instruction. So I think this is where a little clearer drafting and on my part and others would be helpful perhaps. But I think one would look to the intent here as to what the actual goal were.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, again, this is the Doshoni Department of Education. I will, just to Representative Erickson's point, I'll point out the intent, just to clearly state on the record, stated before, the intent is for more access for non-public students to be able to participate in supplemental online learning programs. To the point of clearer drafting, as mentioned before, the intent from our finance department is to capture what I stated before, but happy to look at ways to clarify that language. And then to Representative Bennett's point, just to the point on teachers, if we look on line 3.22, or 3.21 to 3.22, a teacher, for the purposes of this section, a teacher is a public employee as defined under statute, employed by a charter school or a district providing online learning and online instruction. And so the definition of teacher as a public employee only applies to districts and charters. And so that would also go to showing the intent of that. This is really just about opening these opportunities up for non-public students and not opening it up to any of the parameters provided in this proposal applying to non-public schools.
Thank you, Mr. Oni. Mr. Bennett, do you have a follow-up or should I move on? I have another member who has a question.
Madam Chair, thanks. I'll save my for final comments. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mohler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to just take a step back here. As someone who is an appellate attorney, I often have to look at statutory interpretation issues and try to figure out what the legislature intended when they wrote a statute. And that's what the courts do all the time. It's interesting being on this side of things now and helping craft statutes that other people are going to interpret later. But what I'll say is it's been very clear from this discussion today that the parties are willing to work on the language to clarify things, that there may be some vagueness. And if courts find vagueness in language, if it's not clear, if it's not plain language, they often look to what the intent is of the legislature. And part of that looking at intent is listening to hearings. And it's really fun. I've done that a lot. I've gone back and listened to legislative history, but they'll go back and they'll listen to the legislative history to determine what the intent is. And so I just wanted to kind of take us back to how that works through a court process, but I appreciate Mr. Uni very clearly stating what the intent is with this language, and also to Representative Bennett and Chair Richardson for their willingness to work on language. Of course, we want to have clear language for everyone moving forward. That's all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I don't see any other hands. Representative Bennett, your final words on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Richardson, I appreciate your willingness to work on this as we go forward. I guess I would ask that we would, at this point, take this amendment, remove non-public from this the whole thing right now, and then go back and rework it and insert a brand new amendment, making some clarity to this. It's so important, I believe, whatever we do in this body, that it becomes very clear, and it's obvious that it's not written that way right now. And the other thing is, I believe the key stakeholders here, including the Non-Public Education Council, need to be involved in this because they would have input to add some clarity to the picture as well. So, Madam Chair and Chair Richardson, I would ask that you would take this amendment, remove the word non-public, and then let's move forward from there as it moves on. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Bennett. Rep. Bennett renews her motion to adopt A3 amendment to the DE1 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Druskowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Mueller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, no.
Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Up next, we have the DE2 amendment. Representative Erickson, would you like to move the DE2 amendment?
Madam Vice Chair, I do move the H3401 DE2 amendment and request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this is going to be a walkthrough more or less, I guess more than it is less, because we want to explain what our intention is for our students who now have experienced 2 years of lost learning due to Governor Walz's closure, and even more for the Minneapolis students who have just experienced or still are experiencing a strike that's gone on for at least 12 days. That they have not been in the classroom. So this amendment is going to point out policy that will help to bring about that closure of lost learning, that recovery that is so important. We speculate that at least a third of our students in this state are behind the grade level they should be at because of that lost learning. The strike in Minneapolis makes it even worse. And so we have to be very, very concerned about our students and our families and, of course, our schools that include our teachers and other staff. So this amendment focuses on innovation and local control. It empowers parents. It empowers students. We focus on recruiting and retaining effective teachers based on a bill that Representative Lisa Damuth had brought forth. And of course, we want accountability within our state agencies, primarily the Department of Education and the Professional Education, Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board. So, Madam Chair, I believe that we have an agreement that I will yield now to my members to explain sections of their of this proposal, and then I will complete the presentation and close off the amendment. Is that correct, Madam Speaker? Or excuse me, Madam Vice Chair?
You promoted me. Thank you. I'll take the promotion. Yes.
Yeah, you might be a good speaker. Okay. Thank you. And so I will yield to Representative Bergdahl to continue our walkthrough of our DE amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Erickson and Vice Chair Hassan. A few items that I would like to briefly highlight for you. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Richardson and Representative Hassan for working with me to include the civics provision that raised civic relevance by making it credit bearing and requiring it to be taught to juniors or seniors. And with Representative Hassan's personal finance, this bill helps ensure some very needed learning. The other two provisions that I have here, I have just gone through for you in some detail, so I'm not going to do it this time unless you all want to hear me all over again. Anybody? All right. We require a civics test. I'll just add, again, that reporting the scores is not required, and I know that Representative Richardson raised some questions about what the questions are. Again, this is the national civics test taken from the questions that are given to our new citizens. We do review these scores each year, we review each year through the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation, the questions. So we do have that process in place, and we do change them from time to time. But the fact is, we do have a test. The scores are not being reported. We don't know what's happening. We don't know even if the test is being taken. And that's what this provision does. So we'll have, I think, further discussion of that later. Again, as I said before, willing to work with Chair Richardson on that. The other area addresses school safety. And once again, what I'm trying to emphasize is that school safety is for everyone. Malicious and sadistic behavior is intolerable for everyone. And that's all that particular provision addresses. So with that, I will yield to Representative Scott.
Thank you. Am I supposed to go through the chair again and say thank you, get permission, or just go on from here?
Just go on.
Right, perfect. All right, don't want to step on anybody's toes there. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. So what my section of the bill addresses is Representative Feist's bill for regarding student technology and the enabling of parents and students to know what these technology providers are, what they're providing. And so this is pretty much Representative Feist's bill with one exception, and that's on 10.3 through 10.5. And it addresses when, at the beginning of the year, there's an amount of time that parents have to be given notice of what these technology provider, that they have access to the technology providers contracts and that sort of thing. And what this does is it says that they also at that time, that notice period, have to inform the parents that according to and consistent with current statutory provisions, the parent or student's ability to opt out of any curriculum testing or student surveys that might be offered through a technology provider. So it's restating to the parents as a reminder, hey, parent, you have already this right under current Minnesota law to opt your child out. And so it's tweaking that area of Representative Feist's bill that seemed to give some hesitancy to members on both sides of the aisle on her bill. And so I think it's a really good provision. The time has really, it's past due on putting something into statute about this issue. And Representative Feist did a fine, fine job working with all the stakeholders on this. It was a shame that we ran out of time when she was presenting her bill last week, because she had answers to every one of the concerns. And so for that, I'm regretful that we that not enough time was allowed for that. But Representative Feist, I'm supportive of what you're trying to do, as you well know, and this is addressing that. So thank you, members. And I will yield to Representative Mueller.
And thank you, Representative Scott and Vice Chair Hassan. And members, I'm gonna be talking about Article 1, Section 3, and Article 4, Section 20 of the bill, which are our DE2, which of course is something that I've been talking about since the moment I've been elected, and that's being able to give our districts autonomy and flexibility and an expanded pool of people that they're able to employ in their districts. And so in Article 1, Section 3, this talks about being able to hire summer school teachers outside of the regular class, regular school year, that meet the Tier 1 professional license, so that they can teach summer school. We know that summer school is for those who need it is incredibly important, and that it's difficult after a long year to sometimes to get people who are willing to stay on. And so being able to expand the pool and possibly attract people from the community who are willing to teach summer school and invest into our kids like that is an incredible opportunity for our districts to have that flexibility and autonomy. And then in Article 4, Section 20 is about our substitute teachers. And again, you've heard me talk about this time and time again. And so in this DE2, this would take the provision that would allow our districts to hire community members that qualify under the Tier 1, and that they would not have to get a license from PELSD, but they would have to pass a background check, a professional background check, and that the school districts would have to report who they hire, and also they would have to report any complaints about them. In both sections that I was talking about, the school district would have to report to PELSD who they have hired, and so that we are still maintaining accountability and that we're getting quality individuals into our classroom, but that we're able to have a little bit more flexibility and autonomy for our districts, so that they can get more community members and more people that would possibly then move up in the tier system and diversify our workforce and be able to get teachers with very different experiences and in front of our students. So thank you so much for considering these provisions. And at this time, I'd like to yield over to Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Representative Mueller and Madam Chair and members, thank you. I just like to highlight a couple items in Article 1, the first being in Section 1, which allows public schools and non-public schools to make agreements concerning transportation issues. And I don't think I need to say a whole lot about this. It was based on my bill, House File 3937, which we recently heard and had strong bipartisan support in our committee. So I'm perplexed why it's maybe not included in the original amendment, but thus it is in this one, and it, you know, really allows flexibility for parents. This non-public transportation is for parents. It's for the parents to get their children to school, and I think allowing public entities and non-public entities the flexibility to work together is a win-win situation. So that's in here. And then Article 1, Section 2, we have education innovation zone options expanded, and it also no longer requires Minnesota Department of Education approval. And members, we're all pretty familiar with the innovation zone program. It's been a great program allowing for flexibility and opportunity for schools to innovate. And This actually expands those opportunities into areas like evaluation, teacher and principal mentoring, and more. And I think, you know, this is no longer a pilot program as it is listed currently. It's been around enough where it's not a pilot. And I don't think we have the need to hold school districts' hands and micromanage them. I think we should empower them and give them opportunities to innovate and just let them go for it, because that's their thing, educating our children, and we need more innovation to meet the needs of kids. So those are two areas I'd like to point out, and I will yield back to Representative Erickson.
You're muted, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Bennett and Madam Vice Chair Hassan. I will continue to point out that if we're going to recover from all the learning that was lost during the 2 years of closure and the pandemic and try to close the achievement gap more quickly, we need to really empower our parents to be more active and directly involved in the education of their children. They need to have a direct role. And to accomplish this delete all DE2 amendment would in 128.36 give parents the right to choose a high quality, culturally affirming education for their children, regardless of their zoned public school. And over the years that I have served in the legislature, I have repeatedly heard from parents who desire to have this choice, this ability to place their children outside their zoned public school in a school that is going to be high quality for them and culturally affirming for them. So we bring forth this with gratitude to those parents and for wanting to involve them more. 128.38 continues. There's also a proposal here in the DE2 to give parents the right to request a change of teacher for their child if another teacher is available. This is another request that came to me when I was chair, is the stumbling blocks that parents have to be able to change their child to a different teacher if there's a different teacher available. Because we know, whether we're parents, grandparents, former teachers, present teachers, or others, that sometimes the conflict results because of personality differences, the teacher and the child. And I remember experiencing that when I was a teacher. And I think in all my years, I requested maybe a couple of students consider, you know, being released from my course and taking a different course from a different teacher in the English curriculum, because, you know, I just didn't meet their kind of personality or their needs. And so, you know, this is really important for our parents. Also in 124E.06, empowering parents to form a charter school if they have an approved authorizer. And that's an important step today for choice, for parents wanting to stay within the public school, but wanting to have that choice to form a public school. And when we listened last week to the organization that really focuses on African descent, I know I first said to the director that he would be great to form a charter school. So, you know, that organization possibly could be an authorizer, but it would be a great boon to our children. Borrowing from a recent introduction by Representative Doubt, giving parents the opportunity to opt out of the school mask mandates. And that would be new law. So that's one of our few new additions to the education section of law. But parents are looking for that opportunity as well. So those items that I've mentioned now in our proposal really do empower parents. But then we've also focused on student discipline and student climate this session. And it seems to me that the DFL in this proposal of theirs are so heavy-handed in involving the bureaucracy, like a one-size-fits-all approach. We want schools to be mindful in how they approach student discipline. And we want students to know their responsibilities will come with rights. And that's important for students to understand. So in the World's Best Workforce section of law, 120B.11, subdivision 2, we have added strategies to identify and reduce disparities in student discipline to be added to the plan that school districts develop for their world's best workforce. We think that that will add a great deal of important information to understanding how discipline is really a local issue and how they should design their discipline policies. And also strategies for integrating and improving character in citizen education. I've always been a proponent of character education, and in fact, was one of the chief authors years and years ago. And I am so grateful that one of my schools, Malacca, did incorporate character education. And that has made all the difference, that students understand through the teacher's modeling and a definition of the character trait, and seeing that modeled by students and others, what building good character does for our children. And that's a strategy that I've always considered important, in addition to helping them understand citizenship, which is often one of the character traits that's included. In 121A.55, we look at school dismissal policies and want them updated to include that you inform students of their rights, including the right against self-incrimination. We think that's important, especially at an upper level, for students to understand. And that students who face possible dismissal will be allowed to have a parent present during any questioning. And then to require a record of school employees who make referrals for discipline so we can identify any potential bad actors who might be targeting students based on race or ethnicity. We think that's an important requirement to include when we look at student dismissal and school discipline policies. Then we move to, in our DE2, to our desire to want students to be protected from real dangers in our communities and to open new opportunities for the love of learning and a lifelong learning experience. As you recall, Representative Jergens, and I'm grateful to Representative Richardson for including this. He doesn't mandate this, but he encourages that school districts and charters provide instruction on substance misuse prevention and awareness, both at the middle and high school levels. That's so important for our students to understand in this day and age when we have drugs so popularly disseminated among our young people. You know, and even an emoji might be a factor in indicating, you know, what drug might be available. So there are so many instances of attacking our students, not maybe attacking them directly, but putting them in danger, that we think we could improve by including Jergens also, Representative Jergens' proposal also in our proposal. And then we are so glad that Chair Richardson has been brave, as I tried to do for years, to repeal the PSEO gag rule. You know, that's also very important to the love of learning and lifelong learning, that our families know that the post-secondary enrollment option is available to them, and that we have a requirement for reporting how many are participating in PSEO from our districts and charters, and that we also establish a uniform grade weighting policy for credits that are earned in PSEO courses, much like those that are probably earned at those weighted grades in concurrent enrollment courses. And that might be something we continue to work on, but we have included Representative Richardson language in our proposal. And next, we want the best and most effective teachers in our classrooms. And so we make a conscious effort to recognize need for change. First of all, to focus on Representative Lisa Damus' Teachers of Color proposal that she's brought forth for the last 2 years. She's been a leader in our efforts, and her language really, I think, focuses on our ability to recruit and retain a diverse teaching force, and a diverse teaching force that will be effective in the classroom. So that brings us, of course, to the Pelsby creation, which is called the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board. So if we're going to have a board that calls itself professional, then every license that they issue is going to be considered professional. And that is, you know, one of the proposals that we've included is that we honor all licensed teachers as professionals. Next, we repeal the requirement for schools to post and try to hire a tier 2, 3, or 4 licensed teacher before hiring or retaining a tier 1 licensed teacher. This current requirement is a barrier to teachers of color, and we've heard that over and over again. On to the tier 2 license, that would no longer need to be requested by the school district. A qualified applicant could apply directly to Pelsby for a tier 2. The license would be transferable between school districts. We think that gives great hope to those who want to begin the teaching career, the teaching profession, and who can work their way having a BA degree through the process. Next, we prohibit the use of seniority in hiring or dismissal of a teacher. And I know Representative Hassan, you've been a champion of this. So until we end, and Representative Damuth has made great arguments in this respect, as I think I have in the past. Now, if we end the quality blind practices of teacher retention, we will continue to see too many effective teachers, including our teachers of color, shown the door, because last in is first out. That date of hire becomes more important than the quality of the teacher. And we have seen so many quality teachers of color enter our classrooms. I believe I heard today on the news that there must be close to 240 or so teachers of color in the Minneapolis district. And the question that was raised by the journalist who was present at the news conference was concerned about those teachers having seniority, but would they be able to retain that seniority? So we want to protect our teachers of color who are quality, who are just doing the very best for our students. Next, we require districts to report all new teacher hires and terminations, including layoffs by race and ethnicity. We prohibit prioritizing Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers for unrequested leave of absence. Again, giving the diversity of teachers within the first two tiers these policies that target teachers of color. We think that's really important. Next, we expand the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color grant program to include assisting teacher candidates to obtain a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license, because the current law only provides for a Tier 3. And this proposal would expand to include alternative teacher programs. And Representative Hassan, I think you and I have co-authored that bill. Current law, as you recall, limits grants to higher education institutions that offer an approved preparation program. And we need to go beyond that. Time has come for us to look at options, alternatives. That proposal that we've included also repeals language that gives preference to prior grant recipients in awarding the competitive grants. Then the expanding of Grow Your Own grant programs. I was so delighted when I served as chair to have the Grow Your Own program in Minneapolis begin. In fact, their first director was a former employee working in my area in the house. And Molly did a fantastic job getting the Grow Your Own in Minneapolis off the ground. And I was so proud of her, as she worked more or less as a mentee in our area. So we expand that Grow Your Own program to include supporting Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers to qualify to proceed through the tiers, because we will have many candidates who receive who have a bachelor's degree, who are in the Tier 1 and move to Tier 2, who want to go on to 3 and 4. And we want to encourage that in the Grow Your Own program. We know that the most effective teachers also bring with them not only an expertise in their content area, skills of pedagogy and passion for teaching, but they bring character and honor to the classroom. And that is why we have included provisions informed by some of those wrenching testimonies that we've heard in committee, including codifying the teacher code of ethics and including in that a standard against discriminatory conduct, and giving parents the right to file a complaint for any code of ethics violation. They can do that through their school district. We include prohibiting school employee contracts from containing any protections against discipline or termination for school employees who engage in immoral, unethical, or illegal actions. Collective bargaining agreements should be about wages, benefits, and working conditions, not special provisions that put careers ahead of our children. And then we heard an important bill on prohibiting malicious and sadistic conduct, which we have heard talked about today, and testimony that this conduct sometimes comes from teachers. I think some of you recall the testimony we heard and saw. Malicious means the intent to cause harm, and sadistic means, you know, deriving pleasure from causing harm and humiliation. So clearly there is no place for that type of conduct in our teaching profession. And before we can expect better from our children, we need to demonstrate better from ourselves. Therefore, a teacher committing an act of malicious and sadistic conduct would be subject to the suspension or revocation of their teaching license. Of course, leadership begins at the top, and we've heard so many stories from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, teachers, parents, and students on where our Department of Education and our Educator Licensing Standards and Board have failed our system of education. So to address those issues, we have included in our DE2 that the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board be required to review our teacher preparation programs. And although I will not be around next year or the years following as a legislator, I know that I have colleagues like Representative Mueller who will certainly look into this as she gets her doctor's degree in that area. You know, our teacher preparation programs are status quo, and they are not taking a look at really what's happening in the classroom. And when I served on the Board of Teaching and served as the former Board of Teaching and served as an evaluator, I listened to students. Students tell me that they took what they called then Mickey Mouse courses. They weren't taking courses that were teaching them how to become great teachers, and that disturbed them. They did not talk back then about not learning how to teach reading, but we know that over the years that has declined into something that is not fulfilling the needs in our classroom. So PALSBY needs to review their requirement for testing elementary teacher candidates in their knowledge and skills for the science of reading. We've got to take a close look at the teacher preparation programs and make sure that they make those changes, and that should come through PALSBY. So that's the reason for including that proposal. And then Representative Hassan, the proposal that you brought forth to clarify teacher shortage definition and what should be included in the supply and demand report so that our tier one and two teachers are accurately counted as teachers meeting the demands of our classrooms is so appreciated by me and by my team. We want that information to be available. On the side of academic standards, we again propose a pause on standards review and revision until June 1 of 2024 so that MDE and our schools can focus on recovery from the school closures. We also need to clarify that regular rulemaking with full public participation applies to the review and revision of academic standards and includes the adoption of benchmarks, which now, if you do not know, the commissioner can move forward without any input. So we want the statute as it presently is stated to not include expedited rulemaking process. We want people engaged in knowing what academic standards are going to be before their children. And when we resume the rulemaking process for social studies standards, we want to include moral, political, and intellectual foundations of the United States, the greatest nation in the world, in which we live freely. I mean, we should be so cognizant of that now when we watch what is happening in Ukraine. This doesn't mean ignoring the immorality that exists in our history. We certainly want that included. We want histories bad and good taught about our United States and its founding. But having standards that reflect why this country is and why it remains a great country, drawing millions from around the world. As I heard President Biden say yesterday, he's going to welcome at least 100,000 refugees from Ukraine. And, you know, that's the kind of nation we are. We're welcoming, but we want to make sure that our social studies standards are not biased, do not fulfill an agenda. Then moving to the Department of Education, We will require MDE to assist schools in measuring learning loss and identifying best practices to remediate that loss. And because we've heard so many proposals asking MDE to provide supports that schools should already be getting, and MDE's reported answer that they don't have the resources or the staff, leaving me to wonder why MDE works for the federal government and not the children of Minnesota, we want MDE to perform and report a self-audit on how each program functions and how many employees are either required or authorized by federal or state law, so we can determine how our Department of Education might need to be reorganized and refocused to meet the academic needs of our students. Madam Vice Chair, Representative Son, we respect your work and we really respect the work, at least I do, of Representative Richardson. I have been a chair. I know how important it is to bring forth your policy bill. It differs from ours, but I do know how much work goes into that. But we feel that there are too many mandates. There are 142 policy changes, and the focus on learning has been overlooked. Therefore, I respectfully offer this alternative, this DE2 amendment, and again request a roll call. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. I don't know what's going on. I'm echoing. A roll call has been requested, and then Chair Richardson, respond to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, and to all of your members for the walkthrough on the DE2. And I just want to lift up, while we know that there are many differences between the two bills that are here, there are also some similarities as well. And I really appreciate your unwavering commitment to our students, to literacy, and to closing the opportunity gap, and have really appreciated your willingness to be focused around how we address the learning loss, because as we are looking at students coming into our kindergarten classrooms and my conversations with districts and teachers, they're talking about kindergartners that are coming in as toddlers. They are talking about at every single grade level, they're seeing the impacts that this pandemic has had on student learning. And we also know on top of the pandemic, the huge increases that we have seen in mental health diagnoses, the increases that we have seen around substance use disorders, and even the data that we received from the Minnesota Department of Health in one of our earlier hearings around the rise across the state in students who are experiencing exploitation and trading sex for housing, food, and other items as well. And so I know that there is a lot that we are in agreement of wanting to work on together. And that said, you know, I will lift up a couple of things as well. And to Madam Chair, and to the question from Representative Bennett about her transportation bill that passed from committee with bipartisan support, very much in support of that bill. We have a number of bills that pass through to education finance that aren't represented in the current omnibus, but knowing that we have another stop and more conversations to be had, commit to continuing to have those conversations with you as well. I think we can all agree that there is a significant discipline disparity that is happening within our state, and it is something that has been going on for it's not new. It's something that has been going on for decades. And what the data shows us is that it is indeed a statewide issue. It's not just in one community or one school district or related to just one teacher. And so with a statewide issue that shows discipline disparities that are at substantially higher rates than the disparities that we see nationally, to me, speak to the need for a more unified approach. If this were an issue that was relegated to one area of the state, it might make sense to look at that from a more local control piece. But what we are seeing is across the state, there are significant discipline disparities that we continue to see for students with disabilities. Black students and Indigenous students are making up the most significant part of that, the time that is being spent outside of school for nonviolent behaviors. I would also lift up the Jurgens provision as well. That's one of the provisions that we've been able to find some common ground around, and the PSEO provisions as well. Will give another nod to Representative Erickson for her commitment to PSEO, because I know that is something that has been very important, and your advocacy has been on that work, and your fingerprints have been on that work. And as I said, as a beneficiary of the PSEO program, I appreciate all of the work that you put into that. There are some alignments around the teacher of color provisions that you lifted up as well, that were lifted up as well, Madam Chair, through Representative Erickson. And I think that there are continued opportunities for conversations to find more common ground around the teacher of color provisions. And I also want to lift up Vice Chair Hassan for the work that she has been doing over the years to address what we continue to see as the push out of Black teachers, Indigenous teachers, and other teachers of color. And that's a push out that became very apparent after the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education ruling. Following that ruling, we lost more than 38,000 Black teachers across the nation. And there have been other time periods that we've lost teachers. We lost a number of Black teachers after Hurricane Katrina. We lost a number of Black teachers when professional licensing requirements came into play as well. And so the work, I think, there continues. I know that Vice Chair Hassan has a bill around that work, and I know that Representative Damuth has also been a huge champion within that within that work as well. And so with that, members, I know that there are some similarities, there are some differences, there are some points of agreement. I'm going to recommend a no vote on this, but do want Lead Erickson and members to know that I hope that there'll be more opportunities for us to work together around a number of provisions to find some compromise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member questions. I don't see any hands up. Okay. Oh, Professor Frazier, I see your hand up.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple of questions for Representative Erickson. Okay. Representative Erickson, I took a look at your DE amendment, and I listened closely as you presented it in detail. One of the questions I had, let me pull up the Let me pull the amendment up for a second. Just a second. I had a question. In a restriction on contracts with school employees on line 3411, that paragraph starting at line 34.9 to line 34.11, it talks about banning or outlawing protections for immoral acts or illegal activity. Can you give an example of any CBAs right now that would actually protect an individual school employee from discipline or termination if they break the law or violate the law?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Frazier. Well, I reflect on the testimony that came when we were hearing about sadistic and malicious behavior. And as far as I know, nothing was done to that male teacher who was putting his lower parts up next to that young woman, that young student, and whose mother was there almost crying about that behavior. Now, I don't know if, what really happened at the district level, but not to hear that there was a revocation or a suspension, and I read those all the time, although I don't know the name of that teacher, I did not read that descriptor. So I think that's an important piece to have to ensure that our teachers are following moral behavior.
Representative Frazier, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, so Representative Erickson, so then the answer is no, there's no example of any CBA that has a clause that would protect individuals from that violate the law.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure to what Representative Frazier is referring.
Representative Frazier.
I will try to articulate that better. President Erickson, my question is, in your DE2 amendment, what you're saying is you want to put into law is prohibitions on any CBA language that will prevent the discipline or termination of a school employee if they violate the law. My question is, can you give an example of a current CBA contract, anyone in the state, where it allows for the protection of an individual that violates the law of that individual from termination or discipline?
Representative Frazier, no, I do not know of any contract that has that language in it, but I do know of examples, and I cited one where it seems to me that nothing was done, and I think that contracts need to pay attention to the moral behavior of staff, and so that's what my intention is, and I think that's so important because we're professionals. I always consider myself a professional, and when I was in the classroom, I did not ever develop a relationship with a student that was beyond the teacher-student relationship. So that message has to be sent loud and clear that there can't be that kind of behavior going on in our classrooms. And, if a contract is the place to put it, yes, a contract is the place to put it.
Rep. Frazier, do you have a follow-up?
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Erickson, I know of only one licensing board in the state where there's a high threshold that requires, charging or conviction for that licensing board to actually take any action. And it is not the licensing board for teachers. And so I just wanted to be clear for those that are watching, or when folks come back and look at any legislative intent to view these hearings, is that there actually is no current CBAs within this state that actually have protections of disciplining and discipline that may lead up to termination for a school employee for violating the law. And I just think we should be, as legislators, we should be clear about that. There may be anecdotes of where you believe there may not have been discipline, but the fact of the matter is there's no current CBA that was negotiated between a district or any collective bargaining unit that represents employees that have that particular contract language. I agree, I wouldn't want that type of protection for someone that violates the law, but the fact of the matter, it just actually does not exist at this moment. Therefore, the language you have in your DE2 amendment, it's not necessary. And I will note, as you often note in these committee hearings, we do have laws that protect our children, and we do have laws and contracts in place that allow districts to take their appropriate and necessary actions to discipline, and that discipline can be up to termination. And those things currently exist right now in contracts and in law in this state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Erickson, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I do, because Representative Frazier, would you not agree that comfort language, though, could be applicable here? That would be, just the comfort language, the fact that we're putting this in for protection a la carte, so to speak. Why is that comfort language not appropriate?
Rep. Frazier?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, my point is that I don't want anyone watching this currently today or later on for archival reasons or for legislative intent reason to draw the conclusion that we actually have school districts, administrators, and negotiating teams and collective bargaining agreement units, collective units, unions, negotiating contracts that protect school employees when they violate the law or have immoral conduct that is harmful to our kids. That's the point I want to make, and that's the point I want to be very clear for those that are watching right now and those that may be watching in the future.
Thank you, Rep. Frazier. Rep. Erickson, do you have a response, or do we move on?
Well, I just think the default is always that it's the collective bargaining unit that does discipline the teachers. So why is it there in the contract, essentially, that they are the disciplinarian, so to speak?
Rep. Frazier, I still see your hand up. Do you have more questions?
I don't know if that was a question, Rep. Erickson, or if that was just a statement.
Statement.
Rep. Erickson, okay. All right. Rep. Frazier, do you have more questions?
Yeah, just one more thought. Okay. Rep. Erickson, I will say I was glad to hear when you made the comments in regards to your section around what should be taught in social studies when you said you believe that the egregious parts of American history should be taught along with the good parts. But I will note the one thing that you did note when you mentioned the fact that the United States is opening our doors and our borders to take in refugees from Ukraine. And I think that's a great thing. But I also will note on that same day, which I believe was yesterday, it was also, we were also given notice that they are speeding up the deportation process for hundreds of migrants and immigrants that are here out of this country, back into countries that are currently in civil war. And I just think as a country, we have to be aware that if we are sending folks, if we are accepting folks into our country to protect them, we should not at the same time be sending individuals back to countries that are being devastated by a civil war. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Erickson, is there a response? Nope. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, I rest my case.
Okay. All right. That was very interesting back and forth. I don't see any other hands. Rep. Erickson renews the motion to adopt the DE2 amendment, and roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, no.
Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
With 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Chair Richardson, would you like to renew your motion to adopt H3401DE1 amendment as amended?
So move, Madam Chair.
Do you have final words on your amendment?
Well, I just want to thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank all of the members for the robust conversation today, and to thank all of the members for all of the work that has been done so far to get to this point with the omnibus bill as well. Because we had the walkthrough, I won't walk through all of the provisions again, but I do just want to take a moment to uplift a number of key pieces of this bill, with a reminder that as this bill goes on to the Education Finance Committee, there's going to be more provisions as it's rolled into that Education Finance omnibus. But I want to lift up the pieces around eliminating very offensive mascots. It's language that the Department of Education has brought forth previously. And also to lift up the provisions around religious freedom as it relates to traditional tobacco for our students as well. I want to take a moment to uplift the challenges that Metro Deaf School is currently experiencing and appreciate members the bipartisan support that was received on that bill. To ensure that they are able to continue operating as they have from the very beginning. I could not let a education policy hearing pass without lifting up Representative Erdahl and his civics bill. I know that he has been working on this for a number of years, and it was also one of the community recommendations that came forward from the House Select Committee on Racial Justice. Chair Moran and I had the opportunity to meet with a number of students from around the state of Minnesota. And three of the things that students in their own voices who were connected in this process, what they said that they wanted to see within their schools. One was civics, one was financial literacy, and the third was ethnic studies. And so I also just want to lift up the fact that while Representative Erdahl is a huge champion for this, it's also something that students across the state are interested in as well. And thank you to Vice Chair Hassan for her continued work around the personal finance pieces. I want to lift up the work of Representative Edelson, the crisis online learning, and a number of other provisions that she's contributed to this omnibus as well. Representative Keeler and her work around Indigenous People's Day, Representative Hansen's bill around malicious and sadistic conduct, Representative Berg's work around increasing access to mental illness training for administrators and for principals as well, and Representative Howard's bill to provide more flexibility for local schools to rely on school board members by increasing the maximum earning potential for school board members. The teacher of color provisions, we were not able to get the policy provisions across the finish line last year. And so thank you again to Vice Chair Hassan for continuing to push that work forward. I'm missing some folks here, but thanks to everyone who worked to get this omnibus in order. And I really want to take a moment to uplift our staff, who work so hard behind the scenes to ensure that we have everything that we need in order to not only run effective meetings, but to be able to get to this point with a very substantial omnibus bill. So with that, Madam Chair, I would ask for support on the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll now vote on the adoption of the DE1 amendment as amended. This will be, please unmute yourself to vote on this amendment. All in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Chair Richardson renews her motion to refer House File 3401 as amended to the Committee on Education and Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bo?
Bo votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
With the vote of 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to Education Finance, the Committee on Education Finance as amended. Any further committee meetings on education policy will be at the call of the chair, the actual chair, not me, Chair Richardson. There being no further businesses before the committee, we are adjourned.